So as we draw back together, you may be wondering this morning what we're doing here. Why in this day and age are perfectly sensible grown-ups like Matt and Louise and to some extent Martin standing up in front of lots of people, inviting all their friends and their family and having what looks like a really disappointing hot tub experience to announce to the world that they're building their lives around a 2,000-year-old religious leader? Why would anybody do that? If you're sat here asking that sort of question, let me just say, you're not on your own. The rest of us get it. We know that it seems a bit unusual. We're not oblivious to that. Those of us here this morning who would call ourselves Christians, in many ways, have little in common. We're from all walks of life, different ages, different lifestyles, and so on. And the one common thing is that we all believe that that ancient Jewish man, Jesus, is in him we've somehow encountered God. And there's something about that that compels us to make him more important to us than everything else. So I want us to look, before we do these baptisms, I want to look for one moment at one verse of the Bible that says something of why. It says something of why. And as we do this, I'm very aware, you might be sat this morning thinking, I don't buy into any of this. You might think Christians are weird, and some of them are. You might have bad experiences of church. You might not think there's a God at all. Or you might just think it's, well, there might be something in it, but maybe it's built on some tenuous speculation. There are more questions to be answered than we can look at this morning, obviously. But I'm also willing to bet that there is at least a part of you that wants this to be true. I reckon there's at least a part of you that wants this to be true. I guess we'll see. So in a bit of the Bible called John's Gospel, an account of Jesus' life, there's this one line that and it says this: "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him." I'll say it again. God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. So I've just got three very brief observations about this line. First thing is, there is something about God that means that he takes the initiative with us. He takes the initiative with us. It's a bit like, you know, when a young couple get together, then, you know, there's some sort of maneuvering. They try and work out if the other person feels the same, don't they? And eventually somebody has to make the first move. Somebody has to say something. And one of them has to say to the other, hey, I want to pursue this relationship. I want this to be a thing. And whenever anyone does that, it's a bold move, isn't it? You could be left hanging. The other person might just say, sorry, not interested. And with God, he always makes the first move. He does. He comes after us. And he might not send you a text, or he might not pass you a note along the classroom, but he will make himself known. And the big idea of the Bible is that he did this most fully, most meaningfully in this man, Jesus. That's God, in doing that, that's God saying to everyone, I want things to be good between us. And so I'm making the first move. I'm starting this. Secondly, this idea that God does not want to condemn. I don't know what you've heard about God or what impression you have of the God that Christians believe in, but I found that many people think that God might be all about condemnation, that he wants to condemn people, like he's some sort of intergalactic Victorian granddad type who's waiting to find fault and tell you off. You can see why nobody would want to engage with a God like that. And I want to say to you, the God that we're talking about isn't like that. The Christian God isn't like that. And the thing is, he legitimately could be. He's God. He knows everything about you. He knows your ideas, your thoughts, your issues. He knows your bad stuff, everything, even better than you know, actually. He knows everything bad about you, and yet still, his desire is not to condemn you. Think about that. Someone who knows everything about you, all of it, every single bit, and yet still his desire is not to condemn you. And then thirdly, God wants to save. He wants to save. Somehow through Jesus, God's desire is to save people. And that brings a certain assumption, an assumption that somehow we need saving. And that tends to be something, that idea that turns people off God, really does. Like, what? I need saving. I'm a good person. I'm strong and capable. I don't need help. I've never met anyone who hears the idea that they need saving and goes, oh, that sounds great. Or, I'm flawed and in need of saving. Brilliant. Thank you for telling me that. I really appreciate it. But this offer of being saved is for the whole world. It's God saying, doesn't matter who you are, old or young, left wing or right wing, rich or poor, Brighton or Palace, whoever, you need saving. It is the ultimate leveler. It's for everybody. And so there's none of this, you know, how people, you know, some people are good and some people are bad, and I guess Hitler was really bad and Gandhi was sort of good, and hopefully I'm maybe sort of good as well. No, there's just God saying you need saving everyone. That's the hard news. That's the hard news. But the good news is he's saying, I'm extending this offer to everybody, absolutely everybody. In Jesus, God's saying, here's how you know, because I've shown up like this in Jesus, here's how you know that I want to save you. And how does he do it? This son who came into the world is crucified. He takes on our wrongness mysteriously. We don't really fully get it. All the stuff that deserves condemnation, he takes it on. He's the ultimate substitute. And then he rises again. He comes back from the dead. It's mad. Which he has to do not only to prove that he really is God, but to demonstrate that the finality of death, the ultimate human thing that we can't overcome, we can't beat, has indeed been done. That is how saving is done properly. And that is what God says that he does. So, Matt and Louise and Martin are just normal people, but they've seen God take the initiative with them without condemnation. He saved them, and they want to publicly say, this is what's happened to me. And that's all a Christian is, not anyone special. And this church exists, every church exists, because thousands, millions of people around the world, across history, in every culture imaginable, are saying exactly the same thing. That's why we're here. That's what it's about. One thing we like to do as a church is when someone's getting baptized, we like to give them the opportunity just to, for a few minutes, just to share a bit of their story about how they came to today. So Martin's going to go first. So round of applause for Martin McKay, please.
So I got here this morning and I saw a paddling pool being warmed up with water from a kettle, and I thought, how has it come to this? So I'll try and explain. So I first believed in Jesus when I was a teenager. Thank you, Matt. But I come to realise over the years it was like an intellectual faith, if that makes sense. It didn't really guide any of my actions. So that's kind of the most feeble faith there is, really. It didn't change how I lived my life, but I was happy to accept who Jesus was and what happened historically. That wasn't ever an issue for me. So maybe my approach to faith was probably the same as it was to many other things in life, which was sort of quite insular and solitary. I sort of grew up relying on myself to do things, and I was really good at it. I'd set goals, whether they're sort of academic or business or whatever, and I'd achieve them. You know, it was easy, but it was toxic as well, because you're relying on yourself all the time, and I kind of had this attitude that, well, I don't need community, because that would mean you're sort of vulnerable and you'll get let down, and I didn't need any of that. So that meant I didn't need a church, obviously, because I knew everything. So if you're going to adopt that sort of approach, it doesn't work. So Don't do that, and it's exhausting. And so we fast forward to a couple of years ago, and my wife, Shelley, and I, we have two children, James and Gracie. And as a lot of you know, Gracie is autistic. And in the early days of kind of realizing that she's displaying all the signs of being autistic and coming to terms with that, and, you know, mentally it was tough. And I prayed, and very clearly God said, you need to go and talk to Andy Hickford, which was a good thing. And so Andy made time to talk with me on a few occasions, and we prayed. And I remember Andy saying after one of those sessions, he said, this is the first time that you've come up against something that you can't defeat through sort of hard work and stubbornness. You can't do it yourself, and you don't like that. And that resonated, and it was absolutely true. Around the same time, Shelley and I had started sort of tentatively getting involved in the church and coming onto services and going to the Alpha course. And just slowly but surely, we started getting involved in this church, in this family. And sure enough, this kind of faith that was up here, started to actually come into here, and it demanded action. Hence, I'm going to jump in a paddling pool in a minute. So I would say that Jesus used this community church to pierce my heart, because I knew the stories already, and probably like a lot of you, you know, you've heard it all before, but to actually make a difference into how I intend to live my life and you know, being up here, it was a community church that did that. It was going to Alpha, and that's what made the difference. And I remember someone on our Alpha course said, Jesus is like the ultimate sat-nav. So he's like even better than Google Maps. And Google Maps is really good, but it doesn't matter what wrong turns you take. Jesus can always get you back to where you're supposed to be by planning a new route for you. And following that route is really hard, and you'll inevitably, if you're like me, take lots of detours still. And like the sat-nav is reprogramming constantly. I think I've stretched that analogy as far as it can go now, haven't I? I realized that we were just missing out on the best parts of faith, because actually it's a really exciting, amazing journey, and it leads to doing bonkers things like this. And it's kind of infecting everything in our lives, like our parenting and our community involvement and our work. And we're, as a family, we're just really excited that we follow Jesus with our hearts, and it actually means something now. And I just want to thank everyone in this church for the little things you've done, things you wouldn't even be aware of, but things that have made a dramatic difference. And being a part of a family of people who have given their lives to following Jesus. So thank you.
Amazing. Thanks, Martin. I love how just the idea of you did everything that you could to make your life work, and then finally you came up against something, I can't do this on my own. Amazing. Louise, please everyone give Louise a hand.
No, come on.
What's your name? Start with that. Come on.
Louise.
Excellent. My journey to faith. Come on, you've got this.
No.
Okay.
You do it. I can't.
I'll start and then you're going to take over.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm not Louise, so I won't say that bit. So Louise's journey to faith started about 10 years ago when she moved to Worthing from London. She signed up as an Avon rep and gave out some brochures in a local road. A few days later, a lady called Renee rang her to speak to her about Avon products. She also happened to be a Christian mission worker, and she started talking to Louise about God, Jesus, and her faith. Although at the time, Louise didn't really think much about it.
I can't read that bit.
So. Okay. Louise and Alex, her husband, had been trying for a baby for quite a while by this point, and had a couple of unexplained three-month miscarriages, and were told by doctors that there probably wasn't much chance of them having children together. Renee said she was praying for us, and although I thought that was sweet of her, I didn't particularly believe in prayer at that point.
All right, I'll try now.
You can do this.
Right. Fortunately, the doctors found the problem, and our next pregnancy, although it was really difficult, it was successful, and our precious boy was born. Alex and I could not agree on any names, but eventually we both decided we liked one name, although it was not a name I would normally have chosen. Renee asked me what we called our baby, and when I told her Samuel, she told me it meant God has heard my prayer. This stuck with me, and I believe it was more than just a coincidence. I'd always thought there must be a God or something created the universe, but wasn't sure what to make of it all other than that. Renee introduced me to another mum called Hannah, who went to Maybridge Community Church. She also attended a mum and baby prayer group and invited me along. Through that group, I met lots of Christian mum and friends. I also occasionally dropped into church, attended an Alpha course, and Renee continued to talk to me about God when we met up. I then went on to have another beautiful baby, Amber, but now with two babies, I didn't have the time to properly look into any of it more fully. It just wasn't the right time. although I did find myself constantly and unintentionally surrounded by Christians in everything I did in life, which was really strange. Then about 2.5 years ago, my friend Laura started to invite me to join her partnership group. She invited me a lot, and I mostly shrugged her off, but eventually I gave in and agreed to go. A partnership group was a group of ladies who cared about each other, chatted about the talk we'd had in church on Sunday, and prayed together. My partnership group listened to my questions, and they encouraged me to attend an Alpha course again. One even agreed to come with me so I wouldn't have to go on my own, and this time it seemed to sink in a bit more deeply. You've probably guessed I'm not someone who quickly believes things. I need solid answers to my questions. And at this point, I was attending church regularly, attending Alpha, meeting with my partnership group, and meeting one-on-one with Nat from partnership group to discuss questions. And although I believed a lot, I still wasn't 100% convinced. I still felt like there were more questions I needed answered. And then around 17 months ago, my friend Laura, who had invited me to the partnership group, suddenly died in her 30s after a pretty short illness. And something changed in my understanding.
I felt there had to be a reason. Life had to have a reason. And I just knew that Laura was in heaven and that she was with God. It was more than a feeling. It was a certainty I could explain. I knew it, and the questions and answers I had been searching for didn't seem as important to me as knowing that Jesus and God were real and loved me and had a purpose for me.
So then, on the 18th of October 2017, which again, coincidentally, happened to be my eldest daughter Amy's 21st birthday, just felt right that day, together with Helen and Nat, after partnership group, I felt ready to commit to what I believed. Finally, I prayed to God and asked him into my life. And since then, although my life is not perfect, as I have 3 kids and run a business, so it's definitely stressful, I don't have the worry and fear that used to cloud all my thinking. I just know that God's got this, and I'm grateful that he does.
That was very brave. Thank you. Amazing story. And finally, Matt.
So as a teacher of English, I love a good metaphor, so please just indulge me with this, okay? Before my life with God, it was darkness. It felt like a cave. I existed, but I never really felt completely part of something. Indeed, the cave represented not only the darkness, but also the emptiness in my life. The bareness of the walls and the dampness of the air were comfortable. A difficult childhood ingrained the feeling of unworthiness, which befitted my location. The unworthiness of misunderstanding what it meant to be led to an insular view on life. I developed depression. I focused too much on myself and how I felt I did not belong in my own view of what creation was. Suicidal thoughts and indeed attempts followed. Desperation to remove myself from the dark, cold isolation I thought I was in. I prayed. I prayed to, at that time, a God I did not believe in. I prayed for it to stop. And it did. Not immediately. I needed certain people to be where they were to help me in each of their specific ways. What I thought was a chance meeting with a therapist led to the beginnings of my journey to being cured. It wasn't chance at all. It was God. The fact that that opportunity, after leaving university a failure, led to a discovery what I feel is my calling, working with young people. My own former head teacher gave me a job with children, a Christian. Again, the work of God. Little did I know that Jesus was in that cave with me, waiting for me to notice. He was just getting on with it. He was just knocking the walls away, thinking, don't mind me, I'm just doing this. And then at some point I turned round and realised that he was there, providing for me. I began my teacher career at a Church of England school with a reverend as a head teacher, with prayer every day, with discussion about Christ and his teachings, and his word embedded in everything we do. God's voice began to get louder. He knew I wasn't ready yet to explore my faith, but he was dripping the idea into my head. I attended my first communion to receive a blessing. Something was beginning to develop. So God then did the one thing he knew would get my undivided attention. He threw a woman at me. Bex came into my life, and at that first meeting, she made it very clear what could and could not be my intentions with her. Her faith was everything to her, and it fascinated me. So I texted Nick Bellini, who just so happened had heard the first notice that Alpha was being beginning again. My text arrived 1 minute after that service. Isn't his work incredible? This comes following years of Nick's dad, Keith, trying to get me to attend on Alpha course. I became so in tune with the Alpha schedule at Maybridge that I realized when to and when not to answer phone calls from him. Keith, I'm sorry, I wasn't ready. I wanted to make sure my curiosity was based on my feelings rather than that of wanting to impress a girl who seemed far too good for me. I attended Alpha sessions and received answers to questions I didn't really know I had. Not only questions such as how many chicken nuggets can one consume in an hour, we're saying 60, I'll leave that for you, but also questions about why suffering exists and how we can read the Bible through different lenses. My faith began to blossom through the guidance of so many at Alpha, including Aletha, John and Jenny, and of course Nick. And it was during Alpha I realized I'd become a Christian. I say realized rather than decided, because for me it was a change in myself that I recognized I had Jesus as my only hope. I saw that my internal struggles about who I was in the world do not matter. I am loved for who I am. The mistakes for what I have done and how I've always punished myself for those have now been let go. God forgives me, and through my refusal to forgive myself, I was putting myself above him. I have no right to do that. I can only speak of a feeling of peace and contentment since realizing that Jesus was there beside me in that cave. With him, I've broken down those walls, and it is through him I can now live a life that is more fulfilled, full of warmth and in the light. I realize that sometimes, because I'm human, I will mistakenly believe I am on my own again. Most recently, the word of God was used to attack decisions I've made in the past and how I have dealt with certain situations. It was only through God that I came through the first test of faith I've had to deal with. I firmly believe as I continue to ask to be surrounded by the Holy Spirit, learning, serving, and living through Jesus, those who wish to attack will not have the power to question the love of God. My eternity is secure now that I am able to be still and know.
Oh, you thought about that a little bit, didn't you? Amazing.